Recordings have started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the RPM Subteam for Data taking place on the 15th of December, 2017. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. We do have on audio only at this time, Kristen Durain. Is there anyone else on audio only?
Carrie, this is Mary. I'm on audio only.
Thank you, Mary. Noted. Hearing no further names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to Michael Graham. Please begin.
Great. Thank you. This is Michael Graham for the record, and good morning, everyone. We have two listings, and we're going to try and get the is this going to be the most current version, or is this the version that you captured a couple hours ago of the chart? Let me see.
Sorry, Michael, this is Ariel from staff speaking. I just want to clarify the version uploaded to the Adobe Connect. That's December 8th. It's not the most current one. But if we want to see the latest changes, I'm happy to share my screen and show the Google Doc directly. However, people cannot resize the screen and see the words as they wish. They just have to look at my screen the entire time. So I don't know which method you prefer. We have the link in the chat so people can also access the Google Doc directly.
Okay. Why don't we go ahead and use what we've got on the screen up here. I've got a copy of the current version, and I apologize to the group. I made some changes about an hour ago. They aren't incorporated in what you're seeing on the screen, but they're fairly simple and straightforward, so I can share those. If you do have a dual screen and want to, you can also, the link to the Google documents are listed there in the chat. Great, thank you. So if we could go back, and we had gone through question two, both the anecdotal questions and the data questions, and made some changes that we discussed. This version incorporates those changes. And I don't know if we need to go back over those, what they were. If you looked at the document online, you saw indicated the changes there. There were some additions, some changes and such. Do we need to go over that with question two? Does anyone want to look at that further? And if not, I think we were just – oh, Kathy, you want to go ahead?
Hi. Michael, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. This is Kathy. Much more of a procedural question. So we're looking at the version literally of – on the screen of December 8th, but yet a lot of edits have gone in the last 24 hours. Is that right?
When was this upload? My understanding is this incorporates changes that were made up to 2 hours ago. Is that correct?
Could Ariel tell us, okay, so the version we're looking at, could Ariel tell us who the last editor was of the version that we're looking at on the screen in Adobe Connect?
This is Ariel. So the version we have on the screen, that's incorporating the changes from the last call, so it's not the latest. The latest is still in the Google Doc that I haven't got a chance to extract them and put in the clean PDF document. So there is a way to do that is I can share my screen so we can see the latest as
okay.
The Google Doc.
Kathy, do you think that would be the best thing to do, go ahead and share the screen?
I'm not sure how that works or what that looks like, but at least I understand what we're looking at. Thanks.
Yeah, Ariel, let's try that and see what it looks like. Okay, so you're totally in control of that screen then, and we can't control it other than running the size on it, okay. Yeah, you want to hold it there at question four? We'll start there now. This version incorporates some changes that I had made an hour or so ago. So what I'm going to do is just go through the two columns of questions as we've rephrased them. The one on the left is for anecdotal responses. The one on the right is intended to capture more empirical information and evidence. And we did make some changes in question two, so we may want to make some changes in question four and going on. That's really the thing that I'm most concerned about, that in the phrasing of the questions, and if anyone has any suggestions for changes that might make these more clear what we were trying to get at. Our intent, as we discussed the last time, is to be able to provide the survey developer, designer, with clear questions that we want to have answered, then with the expectation that they would make changes that they saw necessary to obtain those answers that we were trying to get at. So the anecdotal questions for question four begin with, do you believe registry operators should be required to publish their reserve names lists? And then that's followed up with, if so, what problems do you think publication of these lists would solve or address? And then this is followed by a separate question. In the event a registry has placed a trademark in its reserved names list and later decides to release that name for registration, I don't know if we can move, yeah, thank you. Should the registry be required to provide trademark owners in the TMCH notice of the release and a priority opportunity to register the domain name upon its release? That question followed by, if so, why do you believe this should be the case? Any comments on that inquiry?
Michael, this is Christine. My hand is up.
Oh, okay. Christine, since I can't see it, go right ahead.
Thank you. Yeah. It's virtually up. Thanks. This is Christine for the transcript. I just wanted to say the only addition that I would make is I think you're assuming that the brand owners are going to answer in the affirmative here by saying, if so, why? I'd also like to just add, and if not, why not?
Good point. I agree. We should put that in there. So that would be, let's see, right now we've got, if so, why do you believe this should be the case? If not, and should that also be on the top one, the do you believe registry operators should be required to publish their reserved names lists? It says, if so, what problems do you think publication of these lists should solve or address? And I guess we don't have to follow that up with a if not, because if not, you apparently don't think there are any problems that would address, so.
Well, but I do think there could be a situation in which a brand owner says the reserve names list should not be published because we think that publication would create its own problem. So I think we do want to leave that space for why does a brand owner think they shouldn't be published? Because I think there would be some discrepancy there. I think some brand owners will want it. I'm interested to find out if some brand owners will not. And I'm sorry for my daughter yelling in the background. I'm dropping her off here.
Okay, so Christine, correct me if I'm wrong. Then what you're thinking is wherever we have one of these if so questions or follow-up questions, we should also have an if not, basically why not?
I think for the ones you've read so far, yes. There may make sense someplace else not to do that, but I do think that for at least the two we're talking about, it does make sense.
Okay. I would agree with that change in addition. Anyone else? Okay, if we can do that, Ariel, we can do it after the fact. but add those. The next question, which I hadn't read, do you believe registries will have any issue with this requirement? If so, what would those issues be, or what do you believe those issues would be? And I guess that's one that, if not, doesn't make any sense if we were to follow that. Then I made a change in my draft, so I'll explain it. Originally, this last question, has your participation in Sunrise Period Registration been affected by registry operator reservation of names? If so, how is a follow-up? That was originally in the empirical section, the data section, and it seems to be calling for an anecdotal response rather than metrics, so I place it down there. And I see a couple of hands up before I go further, so Kathy, I think you were first.
Actually, let me wait for Jay Scott, because I just lost the page that was open. So.
Oh, okay. Jay Scott, you want to go ahead?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I mean, I guess I am curious as to why we would ask trademark owners this question about, do you believe registries would have an issue with this requirement? If so, what would those issues be? I mean, first of all, what does that really add to our discussion? I mean, that just seems to be, I'm getting worried that this thing's getting so cumbersome that we're no way going to get it in for $50,000, and we don't even know if we have $50,000. And so I look at stuff like this, and I'm like, how does that really give us information that pushes us forward? I it should be for the registries to answer a question like that. But why do we care what the opinion of trademark owners is about what have them postulating about what registries may or may not want to do? I don't understand the purpose of that. I don't see how it informs us. Oh, my opinion is they would love to do it. My opinion is they wouldn't want to do it for the world. I just don't understand why we're asking that question. It seems to be superfluous.
Okay, so let me see if I can address that. This is going back, of course, to the charter questions, and that's charter question 4. Talking about registry operator reserve names practices, whether they're unfairly limiting participation in Sunrise by trademark holders. And so these questions were intended in part to address that, that more general charter question. And then there were a separate charter question, should registry operators be required to publish their reserve names lists? Which is an opinion question, and so that's one that I believe would be addressed also to registry operators as well as trademark owners. And then what effect, whether or not that would be a positive effect on trademark owners, I think is where these questions are coming for trademark owners and such. And then the final, I'm trying to look at the final charter question, should registries be required to provide trademark owners in the TMCH notice and the opportunity to register the domain name? Should the registry release it? What registry concerns would be raised by this requirement? So I guess that, do you believe registries will have any issue with this requirement? That question itself, I think, would go at the position of the trademark owner in response to what the registries are doing that might affect the trademark owner's activities, which is what, in part, this question is going for, the charter question. The more important is, of course, what the registries would say, but I think this is also trying to get at that perception. Does that do anything to clarify that, Jay Scott?
Well, I mean, I guess where I am is I feel like if that's a charter question, it can be answered by two groups, the same charter question, and so we could ask the registries one part of it and the trademark owners another, or we can ask every, but I don't think just because it's in this question that was somehow glommed together and thrown into the charter, that we need to necessarily ask the same form of the question to every group. We only need to extract from each group the information to answer that question that they are capable of supplying.
Mm-hmm.
And asking someone their opinion about what someone should, what they think someone would think, I think is not very helpful.
Okay, thank you. That's my record. Anyone else want to comment on that point? And I think you're specifically looking at that question, do you believe registries will have any issue with this requirement?
This is correct. Christine. I'll be in the queue. I think Kathy's waiting. Thank you.
Okay. Christine, you spoke up first. Why don't you go? And then I have Susan. So,
okay.
Christine,
thank you. Thank you. This is Christine. Yeah, I support Jay Scott, and I think maybe you didn't make the first call that we had, and that's fine. But I actually made the same argument. Because the very first lead-off question for registry operators was, do you think that your Sunrise pricing is affecting brand owners? So I'm with Jay Scott. I think you have to be – we're not going to be able to ask every single party all the same questions. I think the first two questions on this section are absolutely right on. I do not think we should waste our time asking brand owners to speculate about registries. We're asking registries themselves this exact same question. And I think we're asking registrars as well. So I think that we asking the brand owners again is just making this too big and unwieldy. And I think that's my thought for the entire thing. Don't ask people that aren't the sort of the niche market we're targeting. Thanks.
Susan Ping.
Yeah. Hi there. Just the same comment, really. I put it in the chat, but I wasn't sure how much you're watching the chat as well. And I was just going to say the same thing. I think it's information we want, but it's not really information we want from the brand owner, because they probably will. Of course, I don't think the registries will have any issue with this, but that's not really the point. I mean, they're not the ones who are able to answer this. So provided we are asking it of the registries, and I said in the chat, I haven't had the time to go back and cross-check that, but I'm assuming we are. If we are asking it of the registries, then we don't need to be asking it of the brand owners as well. We'll get the information we need, and then we have to decide what we do with it, you know, weighing up the answers we've had from registries and from others.
Okay. Thank you, Susan. Kathy, you had your hand up as well?
I'll just say a big yes to all of that. Thanks.
Okay, and in response to that, since I have the copy open as well, Ariel, I went ahead and removed that "Do you believe?" question. So that's out. How about the movement? Was there any comment on the movement of the "Has your participation in the Sunrise Period registration been affected by registry operator reservation of names?" Follow up, if so, how? Kathy, is that an old hand? Okay, thank you. Then going back to the, for lack of a better term, the metrics question, there I had removed the last part and revise it somewhat so that it now reads, do you know if any of your trademarks have been reserved by any new GTLD registry operators? A follow-up to that, if so, have you contacted the registry operator to inquire about these trademarks? And I'll explain why I put that in there. I'm not entirely sure, how a trademark owner is going to know if they've been reserved unless they've tried to register and received a notification, what we were trying to get at with this. So I wasn't sure, just asking the question, do you know, didn't seem to be getting anywhere. That's a yes or no answer. What would be a good follow-up there that would help again, elucidate whether or not there were actual effects from the reserved names practices. So any suggestion there would be welcome. Kurt, you have your hand up?
Yeah, maybe you just hit on it right there where we just changed the question to, you know, have you tried to register one of your trademarks during the sunrise period and were unable to because the name was reserved or for some other reason? So just go right to the factual question. And, you know, then you could say, if so, which ones? Or, you know, if you tried to register a name during sunrise and could not, you know, what do you think the reason was?
Thanks, Kurt. This is Michael. I have a couple other hands, so let me go through those. Susan? I think you're there you go.
Thanks. Sorry, yes. Am I off mute now? Yes, I am.
Yeah,
I think something that gets to the heart of it, such as the language that Kurt was just suggesting, might be better because it's because that makes that helps the person you're asking it better understand what we mean by reserved as well. Because I think we all probably know what we're meaning by reserved in this particular group. I know these aren't the questions as they'll go out, but I mean, even to the survey providers, they may not quite know what reserved means. And so we need to kind of explain what the issue is. And the issue is actually, you know, did you try to register it and find that you couldn't because it was out of action for you?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it falls here or if it falls somewhere else, but it may be, might be helpful to be asking, if you contacted the registry operator, did you manage to get the name released for you to register? Or do you think that there would be a benefit in having some kind of formal process to allow you to make inquiries or make challenges on when names have been reserved?
Okay. Great. I see you're capturing this, Ariel. Thank you. Kathy, you have your hand up as well?
Yeah. I don't know how far we want to go down this, but I agree that people aren't going to know why they can't get their domain name. So one thing we might do is ask for examples of names that people did try to register, because they're not going to know, and I don't think most people know about reserved names, premium lists, or protected marks lists. Three reasons why they wouldn't be able to register their marks during the sunrise. So let's see if we can grab some examples, and that would give us the ability to pursue more information. Thanks.
I'm wondering, just to follow up on that, Kathy, if there's a way to phrase, so if the first question is, as drafted by Kurt, have you tried to register a name in Sunrise and could not? That would be the first part of the question. The second would be, were you informed or do you know the reason for the non-registration? If so, what was that reason? So that would specify that. Is that what you were trying to get at, that sort of clarification, Kathy?
No, I'd love if people could give us an example. Could you give us an example of a string or a domain name you couldn't register during the sunrise period that is in the TMCH, that's a registered TMCH mark? And that would actually give us the ability, because they're not going to know, again, they're not going to know why it was that they couldn't register it. So an actual physical example or two would be great. And some of these people will have it at their fingertips. And, you know, some of the trademark owners responding will have it, and some people won't. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. Michael, for the record, yeah, I think you're probably right. If there were a refusal, that's probably something that is stuck in the trademark owner's craw. They would be able to give it. If there is reason they couldn't give it, that's fine. But if we can get some actual firm examples, that would be excellent to take a look at. I wonder if then we should have a follow-up such as that being suggested. I think that was Susan suggesting it, which was if you did have a refusal, whether you contacted the registry operator to get the name released to registration. I'm not sure. Maybe the broader question is, were you able to get the name released to registration despite the initial refusal? I'm not sure whether and how that might be best phrased.
Michael, can I make a suggestion? Yeah, this is Kathy.
Yeah, go ahead.
How about what did you do, if anything?
Oh, that's too easy. I would go with that. I mean,
okay.
it's rather open-ended to be on this side, but I think it is asking for a specific type of answer. And maybe what we ought to do is, if there's a way of phrasing it so that if they come up with, say, one example, you know, the questions are fine. If they come up with more than one example, perhaps we need to be phrased in a way that they can say, this one I did, these I did not, sort of thing, so that it could actually be the metrics of that could be counted. But I do like that follow-up question.
Great.
So if we could sort of save those proposed changes to the question four in the metrics side, that would be great, Ariel. Then if we could move down then on page 17.
Michael, could I leap in before we move on?
Oh, yeah, Susan, sorry.
Hi, it's Susan, sorry. I was just thinking about that again and thinking that we are particularly interested here, of course, in the issue of reserve names. So I do think we need to have some kind of reference to that, you know, even if it's a reference to the term and an explanation of what we mean, rather than a just like, you know, did you try and register a name and you couldn't? Because we then run the risk of getting all sorts of answers from people who basically went, yes, the name was already gone, someone else had got it. And that's not the information we're after. So we do need some degree of specificity in this question. Otherwise, we're going to get answers that aren't the answers that are answers to a different question that we're not the one we're trying to ask.
That's a good point. So maybe the follow-up question is, do you know if any of those were due to the registry, reserve names list? Were due to the string, using that term, the string being on the registry's reserved name list question. If so, can you give an example? Or if so, please give the specific examples. And I think you're right. That keeps the focus on that specific part of the question and not the other types of refusal that they might face. I'm just going to go ahead. Kathy, is that okay? I mean, recognizing that there are different reasons why it might be refused, we're really just asking about the one in these questions. So
I don't know how you stop. Nobody knows why unless you've got special inside information, in which case you're pitching the question to the narrowest of groups. You know, I wish Lori were on the call with us, but the idea that people stop answering questions at a certain point, I don't know, how's the normal trademark owner supposed to know what reason, again, reserve list, premiums list, protective mark list, how do you know what barrier you hit up against when you couldn't register during the sunrise? We're going to get into similar issues with, you know, registrants turning around at trademark notices. You know, we're trying to delve into this, but, you know, they only have so much information when they're sitting there at their keyboards. So I would keep it open. Thanks.
This is Christine. Can I get in the queue?
Yeah, go ahead, Christine.
Thanks. I want to address Kathy's point just really quickly from just the registry perspective. So the brand owner actually can get some information. So they could get rejected because they don't have a valid SMD file, and that registrar would tell them that. Your SMD file is not valid. If it was a reserve name, I'm not sure exactly if all registrars display that it's a reserve name, but it's very easy to go look at the who is. I mean, if someone's filling out the survey, I think we have to assume they're slightly competent. They can go look at the WHOIS and figure out if the domain name is reserved to the registry. And if it's a premium name, well, they're not prevented from registering it. They're just charged a crap ton more. And I think the only difference might be, I'm not entirely sure what the WHOIS shows for blocked versus reserved, and I'm not sure if Susan, I know she runs she's with the registrar, maybe she can weigh in on what the WHOIS would exactly show. But I don't think that there's a huge universe of options. If you show up as a trademark owner during a valid sunrise period with a valid SMB file and you are denied access to a domain name, I don't think there's a huge long list of reasons why not, and I don't think it's extremely puzzling to figure out what those reasons are if you have any sort of competence at all. And if you've got an SMB file, I assume you've got that.
Can I ask you a question? If it is on a premium list and I try to register it during sunrise, and I'm for whatever reason I'm not following the premium list of that registry, how would I find that out that it's available?
You would go to register it, and it would say this domain name is $500,000. It's available, $500,000, and it's yours. That's how you would know.
Okay. Thank you.
Some registries did choose to reserve.
Where is that? Sorry.
Kathy, some registries also chose to put a bunch of names on their reserve list for a period of time because they wanted to churn pricing. But so they might have reserved it and they were going to release it later in a kind of special splash for premium names. But in that case, that name is reserved, basically, for the present purposes. Do you see the distinction?
Yes, and I also think Christine's point is really it. Understand, of course, that you can go to the WHOIS. That a lot of these reserved names. Are there any names that would be reserved that would not be in the WHOIS? Where there would not be WHOIS data for the registry?
This is Christine, and I'm hoping Susan will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that domain names that are registered in 9999. Are not in the WHOIS, but I hope someone will correct me if I'm wrong, or Kurt, someone else.
Yeah, I'm going to say registries could reserve by registering cells, or they could reserve by just, you know, putting a bunch of names, you know, unavailable. So I don't think they would all show up in the WHOIS.
Right, and they do sometimes reserve names show up in the zone file, like Susan's first example, and sometimes the names are put on block status, which means they wouldn't show up in the zone file. So I'm not sure that it is really straightforward for the trademark owner to know the reason, and I'm also not sure the trademark owner is going to want to spend even five more minutes on the survey to look and find out. So I think we want to, you know, we'll be happy to know that the trademark owner tried to register a name and couldn't. And then if the trademark owner can list the name, then if we wanted to go to the extra effort to find out, we can. So we should give the trademark owner the chance to identify the reason, but probably shouldn't count on that.
This is Michael for the record. I'm just looking over at the notes that RL's been keeping, and I think we've got sufficient information. I think this question 4 is going to have to be revised along the lines that were suggested. And I think the primary question we have, a couple of the follow-up questions, which I think are sort of, we begin more open-ended to address the fact that it may be other reasons for refusal. And frankly, when I see a survey like this, it's easier for me to go from, did I have something that was refused? Yes. Do I know why it was refused? Yes. Why was it refused? Then I give the answer, rather than saying, if you had something that was refused, do you know the answer and what was the reason and why was that? That jumps right in, and I may not follow it. So I think we've got good follow-up questions here that do end up getting to the point of, you know, do you know if any were refused because they were on the reserved list? So I think we can put that together, Ariel, from the quoted sections that you've saved in here. And I'm going to say that because we could do word crafting, but I'd like to move on to five to see if we can get through some of this more quickly. And I guess my question to the group that's on the phone is whether or not you had time to look at these questions. If you want me to read through them, I could do that, or I could just focus on changes that have been proposed, and then if anyone wants to propose any changes that aren't recorded in the Google document. Does anyone have any sense of what you would prefer?
This is Christine. I am on the phone. I would appreciate if you'd do a quick read-through. It's been a few days since I looked, and I know it's not fresh in my mind. I'm sorry about that. Thanks.
Okay. That being said, I'll go ahead and do that. You can listen as you're waiting, driving the car or whatever. So question five, the charter question was addressing whether the current 30-day minimum for a sunrise period serves its intended purpose. And that was one of the questions back and forth. So the first of the anecdotal questions, and I'll go through those first, under five was, do you believe the 30-day minimum for a sunrise period serves its intended purpose? There was a note after this, I think we need to identify that purpose as a preface to these questions. And I would agree with that. Nobody sought to put that purpose in phrasing with the questions. I don't know if anyone has a good starting place for that or wants to propose something. But I do think, you know, just asking, does it serve the purpose? If I got this survey, my question would be, well, what's the purpose? I suppose we could simply add, i.e., you know, I don't know where a good definition of that purpose would be. Can anyone point to that?
Hi, this is Christine. Thanks. I think that we did discuss this on the two subteams, both the sunrise and the claims, when we came up with this intended purpose language.
Mm-hmm.
I think we were able to extract something from one of those, the STI or the IRT reports, but I don't remember what that was. So perhaps staff could go back and take a look and see if during those calls we were able to extract the purpose of sunrise. I do believe we were. I just don't remember where to find that at this point.
Is that something you all want to bite off, Ariel or Mary, to take a look at that? So, yeah, that'll be an action item. So let's go ahead with that as an action item. And I think if it's built in at the beginning of this question five, that'll be good going forward. Jay Scott?
So, I mean, I was involved in some of the straw market stuff that took place after the STI and everything, and I think that's where a lot of the time limit discussions came up. And I think the purpose was just to ensure that there was adequate time, an adequate period of time for trademark owners to take advantage of the sunrise period. Didn't want it to be 5 days. So the thought was give it 30 days and it would allow, that would allow everybody plenty of time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think rather than asking its purpose, I think you just ask that question. Do you believe that a minimum 30-day period is sufficient to allow time for trademark owners to take advantage of the sunrise period? Something to that seems to me, you know, that's why it was given, that's why there was a minimum requirement, is to ensure that there was enough time for people to learn about it and to actually take the action to get it done.
Great, thank you.
No, Jay Scott, I wonder if we could ask it more. I'm sorry.
jumping in there. And I was going to say, I entered a quick possible revision to the question. So what I was suggesting, if you can't see the screen, was to change it so it would read, do you believe the 30-day minimum for a sunrise period provides a sufficient period for trademark owners to take advantage of the sunrise period, question mark. Susan, you have your hand up?
Yeah, thank you. I just thought, I think we probably need something at the beginning of this, and again, I recognize that this is not the final version of the questions as they would go out, but I think there needs to be something that explains the two different durations of sunrise period, because we seem to think the 30-day and the 60 days as being the same thing, but one's just twice as long, and they're not. So I think we have to have an explanation in there that says that, you know, there were two different minimum options that registries could adopt. One was 30 days notice plus a minimum of 30 days sunrise period, in which case the names are registered first come, first served from the first day of the sunrise. Or alternatively, no minimum notice period specified, but the sunrise period itself runs for 60 days and the names are not allocated until the end. Because they're two very different models, and so it's not just that the 60-day one is twice as long as the 30-day one. And so, you know, in which case, why would you not go, oh, 60 days is much better for me?
Good point. Thank you, Susan. Kurt, you have your hand up as well.
Yeah, I think Susan's point's really good. And to Jay Scott's point, I wonder, and to you, Michael, I wonder if we should start with factual questions. And, you know, right at the very top, I don't know if we've asked, you know, did you try to register names during the sunrise period? But at this point, we want to ask you, did you try to, you know, did you intend to register a name during the sunrise period but missed the sunrise window? And then, you know, if you did miss the window, you know, why? You know, because you think the period was too short, because, you know, you were unaware of the sunrise, that sort of thing. And then, you know, so then if you believe, then to get to what you wrote, you know, do you believe that the 30-day minimum for a sunrise period provides a sufficient period, et cetera? You know, that really becomes one of the choices to that last question. So did you attempt to register a name during sunrise? Did you intend to register a name during sunrise, but the sunrise period had closed, or sunrise was no longer available, you know, and if that occurred, you know, or if you decided not to register a name because the sunrise period closed, you know, why? And then that would be one of the choices. Another choice would be, I don't know, that you were, you know, that you had no notice about the whole new GTLD program or something like that.
Hey, this is Christine. Can I get in the queue, please?
Yeah, Christine, go ahead.
Thanks, Christine, for the transcript. You know, I also want to know if we should also add in some mention of end date versus start date sunrise. You know, we've got the 30 days start date or the 60 days end date. You know, was there, or the other way around, I'm sorry, backwards, you know, did that mess people up? Were there brand owners that were confused, and did they not get in because it was a start date, but it was fine, it was an end date? You know, I didn't read ahead, so I don't remember if we asked start date versus end date questions. Thanks.
So to build on what Christine just said, maybe that could be one of the choices that, you know, that the trademark owner was confused about the ending date of the sunrise period.
Yeah, I'm putting in some possible wording for that in the Google document. I don't know. I'm afraid I'm mixing terms, the registration window and then the end date, or if those would be clear, what we're trying to get at, maybe the registration window end date, or I wonder if there's better language that we might use. Jay Scott?
Well, it's almost like I'm going back to, I'm sort of reckoning back to what Susan was saying. It seems to me that, you know, there were two forms of sunrise, right? And I guess we need to, maybe what we do is we explain, there were two forms of sunrise periods mechanisms or for implementation, form A and form B. Which of the forms do you believe gave trademark owners the best opportunity to participate? I don't know, in sunrise, because it seems to me that's the question we're trying to get at, right? Of these two forms, which one gave the best? Because as I understand Susan, her point is that the registration period was still 30 days in both mechanisms. It's just in one, the registration happened in a certain fashion, and another, it happened in a different fashion. So I don't know, but it seems to me what we're trying to delve into here is there are two mechanisms. Which one do you feel was the most effective?
Could I completely agree with you, Jay Scott, but do you mind if I just jump in and say they didn't both have a 30-day registration period? I mean, in the start date sunrise, you got 30 days notice where nothing's happening, and then you got 30 days during which you could register, but any but there was a benefit to being in on day one because it was first come, first served. And in the other option, the registry might have given you some advance notice, but there was nothing specified about how much advance notice of the opening of the sunrise they had to give you. But when it opened on day one, you could start applying for names. You had 60 whole days to apply for names, but no one got allocated them until the end. So there wasn't quite the same benefit in being – there wasn't the kind of first-come, first-served issue thing going on.
So let me ask a quick question. Susan, do you or does anyone know what registries, I mean, adopted the different schedules? Are those both out there for different registries? Do we know how many of each?
I don't know off the top of my head exact numbers. Mary has made a comment in the chat, which I would agree with, which is that most registries went for the end date. Not everyone, but it was very common because it allowed for registries to run it allowed potentially for things like if there were two brand owners with the same name, you could have some process for deciding who got the name, for example, giving an auction process or something like that. Whereas the first come, first serve doesn't allow for that. And it also allowed for things like if you wanted to have tiered allocation, so you had the trademark sunrise, but you then also had some nexus requirements around, you know, if it's .London and there was a London nexus and then there was a, you know, some other nexus requirements, you could do, you know, sort of tiered allocation of names, and the tiered allocation for some registries worked quite well by doing the 60-day end date sunrise as well.
Thanks, Susan. I'm going to put
That's
on
probably
my...
much too much detail.
Well, and I was about to say, I'm going to put on my non-ICANN participant trademark owner hat and say, huh? You know, the question for me is whether or not the period for registration in Sunrise was sufficient for me to make a decision or not. Frankly, I allow somebody else to tell me when the deadline for making that decision is. I think it is useful. I mean, and looking at this, you've actually educated me in a way. So it looks like there's a mandatory 30-day advance if I'm giving a start date and saying it's going to be open for 30 days. So that's my 60 days. Whereas if I give the end date, then there's a mandatory advance notice, but that end date has to be 60 days after I open it, something like that. I'm not sure how we would phrase this question. I don't know, Susan, if you would want to, you know, set pen to paper and try one simple explanation of the two things, and then the question inevitably is going to be the same thing. Do you think that these are sufficient? Now, are we trying to get at, is one better than the other, or are we trying to get at, is the way that it's set up now sufficient, or both of those? So is this sufficient, and if so, are both of these methods sufficient for you, or is one better than the other? I'm not sure how we would phrase that question, but that seems to be what we want to get at.
Okay, I'm happy to try. Yeah. I think it probably works if there's a kind of an explanation, and then it's, as you say, did you encounter particular issues with either of these? Did you find that there were problems with the duration of the sunrise?
Mm-hmm. And then I'm just looking at the questions. If we're able to come up with that, I'm looking at the subsequent questions in the anecdotal section. Do you believe the 60-day period observed by many registry operators would be more appropriate? If so, why? That sort of gets subsumed in the two types of periods we're going to ask you, whether or not you believe they are effective. What else? What benefits have you observed when a sunrise period is extended beyond 30 days? That seems to me to be a misleading question based on this conversation. What disadvantages if they're extended beyond 30 days? I think the next one is interesting. Do you believe that the sunrise period should continue to be mandatory in new GTLDs, or should it be optional? Why? And I guess with that I would add, why not? Oops, can't spell. And then finally, do you believe having a sunrise period but no claim service, or having a claim service but no sunrise period, would be a better means for meeting the goals of the TMCH and these rights protection mechanisms? And I think there again we have the issue of what those goals are. So rephrasing it to address that, and I think that probably should be split into two questions. Rather than have it be a compound, which leads to a yes, which then we have to say, well, which one was it? And I can set myself to that. Kathy?
Yeah, just a quick note, echoing back to what other people said earlier. Since we are handing this off to professional survey writers, can we leave them those little things to kind of break things down, since these aren't the questions actually going out to the survey mm-hmm. participants? Just kind of let them handle that kind of stuff. I mean, it's correct, but do we need to do it? Thanks.
Michael, for the record, just to clarify then, Kathy, would you say go ahead and leave this as a compound question, maybe revise it only to point out what the goals are, the same way that we did up front, providing sufficient period, blah, blah, blah. But leave that compound question.
I don't want to spend too much time on it, but just the idea that, we're just drafting. We're just trying to give ideas to the survey writers, I think.
Okay.
Thanks.
And I think, try and keep that in mind. We're not writing the perfect questions. But I will set my hand to that question, just to rephrase that. So the questions that you were going to come up with, Susan, really are going to be towards the opinion side of things, and looking at the metric side, these proposed revision that I made, the first question being, did you attempt to register any of your trademarks in any GTLDs during the sunrise period? we could follow that up if we wanted with in which ones did you register. The question that I have, though, the next one was, did you attempt to register any of your trademarks in any GTLDs during the sunrise period, but you missed the registration window? And the question following that was, if so, why did you miss the registration window end date? And I was just trying to get at not what people felt about, you know, whether the 30 period, the 60 period was better, but if they actually had an incident in which they missed the window, and what was the reason for that. And then a question that was in there earlier, which it, are you aware of any domains that contain strings that are identical to or confusingly similar to any of your TMCH registered trademarks that were applied for after the sunrise period? And that just getting at the sense of timing. Kathy, is that old hand? I'm going to presume that's an old hand. Any comment on those revised added questions in the metrics section? And I guess we only have 1 minute. Is that correct, Mary? I think we had just set up for 60 minutes today, correct?
That's correct, Michael.
Okay, so we're going to have to end here. Susan, if you could work on that question, and I will work on that end question that I was going to revise.
I think Julie Hedlund's hand is up.
I'm sorry?
Hand is up. Julie Hedlund.
Oh, Julie, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Didn't see that.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Michael. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. Just very quickly, just the last item on the agenda is to note the future meetings. You know, we did ask on the list people's thoughts about canceling the meeting on the 22nd of December, and it seems the consensus is to cancel. We have no objections about canceling, and many people suggested that that would be helpful. So then looking to January, we just want to note that, you know, based on discussions that we've had, it seems that this subteam should plan on several more meetings to get through the entire document. And then just to note that you'll also have to review the data needs for the additional voluntary RPMs. So what we'll do with respect to January meetings is we'll just send another note to the list to see if there's a preference for the 1700 UTC versus 1730 time. That's sort of gone back and forth. We'd like to see if we could settle on one of those two options perhaps for the meetings in January and suggest that we start up on January 4th. But I do see that Susan's hand is up.
Yeah, Susan?
Okay. Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to ask Julie, I mean, are we sort of committed to a Friday slot? And the reason I'm asking this is because I know, you know, I can see that many of the people who volunteered for this work are on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. And so obviously the later we can go in what's my afternoon is better for them. And I know, you know, the particular challenges that individuals have in the kind of 1700, 1730 slot, whereas for me, you know, going later on a Friday is not an option. But, you know, every day of the week I'm on calls all night from my time because that's how I can work. So, you know, could we do this on the Thursday or, you know, and I'm willing to do a call much later in the evening if it's not on a Friday. And I'm very, very happy to do that. So I just wondered whether, you know, do we have to be doing it on a Friday? Because that seems to be causing us the difficulty in finding a slot.
Thanks, Susan. This is Julie Hedlund again from staff. Of course, we can do a doodle. We could do a doodle then asking about availability for the Thursday, perhaps also including Friday, but or anyway, we can do a doodle. Short answer, yes.
Okay, yeah, let's do that. And I presume we are looking then for the next time we would actually be getting together on a call would be after the new year.
Correct. Then we would be looking at, January 4th would be the likely time, skipping out on the week of the, you know, Christmas holiday. So starting back up then that week, first week in January.
Great. And if I could invite everyone between now and the 22nd, at which time let's close it down, if you could look at the remainder of the questions under the trademark owners portion, if you have any suggested changes or questions or comments, insert those in the Google document and they can be shared and reviewed. It's a great way to work on it. So thank you all very much for your time and effort, and have a great weekend. And once we have some dates from the doodle, we'll be talking with you again soon. Thank you very much, and I guess we can
start
recording.
Thanks, Michael.
Yep.